So today in our Great Question series, we come to this one from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4, verse 11. How can one be warm alone? What a great idea about being with other people, about the importance of relationships, the importance of human love and companionship. And so this is kind of a big deal in Scripture. I remember when I was a teenager, my friend David Owen and I would look at each other when we came to this section and kind of smile like, I think that's a little risque for church, right? But, you know, we're all adults here. So here's what it looks like. Ecclesiastes 4:9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falls, for he does not have another person to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if one prevails against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. What a huge idea. Companionship, it's a really, really big deal. In Scripture, there's four problems with being a loner. And by the way, you could be a loner by accident through no fault of your own, or you could be a loner because you do choose to be alone. You live out on the side of the mountain and you don't talk to anybody and nobody talks to you, and that's how life goes. Whether you're a loner by choice or by accident, there are four problems you're going to have. First, there's less personal productivity, which we'll say more about in a minute. Second, if you fall, there's no one to help you get up. That's verse 10. And third, if you're cold, there's no one to help you get warm. That's verse 11. And last of all, if you're attacked, there's no one to help you overcome your attacker. That's verse 12. All of those are real life, real time situations, because you will be attacked. And when you're attacked, it's awfully nice to have a companion. How helpful is companionship? Well, the people who train Clydesdales and draft horses, here's what they say. You take a really, really good champion draft horse, and when he's pulling all by himself one of those sleds that is weighted down with concrete, a draft horse, a good championship draft horse all by himself can pull 8,000 pounds. You think, okay, well, then when you put two of them together, I guess they can pull 16,000 pounds. False. When you put two of them together, they encourage each other, and they pull instead 24,000 pounds, as if you had three horses instead of two. Think, no way. When they harness these horses up to the sled, you can tell they're just excited. You know, they start to dance around, and as soon as they think it's time to go, they yank. Well, when there are two of them together, it seems like they encourage each other, and besides, there's a physics thing going on there when you overcome the friction, you know, and get it going. But besides that, they're encouraging each other. Furthermore, if you take the two draft horses and you train them together so that they practice together, then they can not only pull 16,000 pounds, not only 24,000, they can actually pull 32,000 pounds as if they were four horses by themselves instead of two horses harnessed together. You do more with companionship. That's synergy. I was losing my enthusiasm, but I saw your enthusiasm, so okay, now I have enthusiasm again. That's how it works. You don't want to be a loner because you never get as much done. Life is much harder to pull. How bad is aloneness? What if you don't want to have a companion? What if you want to be a loner? How bad is aloneness? Well, it's really bad. From time to time, I remind you that in the early 1900s, which was a long time ago, you know, but we're not talking about ancient history, right? So in the early 1900s, the majority of infants abandoned to orphanages and institutions died, even if they entered the orphanage and the institution healthy. And one Philadelphia orphanage report said, no infant admitted under 1 year of age and retained lived to be 2 years old in our orphanage. They just died because nobody loved them. In those days, they didn't know you're supposed to carry babies around and kiss on them and all those things and say, well, here he is. He's got his food. He's warm. He's dry. Everything should be fine. And then he dies because he's alone. He has no love. And so how bad is aloneness? Pretty bad. Right now in America, there are more suicides than there are accidental deaths, including car accidents. So you take all the accidental deaths, put them together, and we find out we are our most dangerous enemies in this world. And Thomas Joyner, Florida State University, sort of an expert in suicide statistics, he says the desire to die begins with loneliness. They have a lack of inclusion, a lack of acceptance, and so they take their own lives. And it's interesting how this breaks down. Divorced people suffer the greatest suicide risk. So it's because they feel alone. And oppositely, twins don't have as much because, you know, why would they commit suicide? They look just like another person and they love each other. Mothers of small children never kill themselves. It does happen, but it's so rare. And like if you're a mother with six children, you never kill yourself. You might die of overwork and die of worry, but you never die of self-harm. So loneliness is what drives all of this self-harm. Surveys have asked people, so what is this world to you? Describe the world. And what they're coming back with is this kind of an answer. The world is a place where you work longer at more deadening jobs for less pay. And what we find is that aloneness has this sliding scale. And the more alone you are, the more screen time you participate in. You're on Facebook more, social media. So the more alone you are, the more screen time you have. And the more lonely you will be. And oppositely, the more face-to-face time you have with people, the less lonely you will be. And obviously, all of our trends are going the wrong direction right now as people withdraw. There was a book written in the early 2000s called Bowling Alone. And the idea was people don't get together anymore. They don't go to church. They don't join bowling leagues. They don't get together in clubs and gatherings. They're just by themselves. They're exhausted. They come home from work. You hit the garage door opener button in your car. You drive the car into the garage, close the garage door, and you didn't even see your neighbors. Nobody sees you. You're just all by yourself all the time. And young people aren't going on dates very often anymore. There's just this thing happening where we're all so isolated. And aloneness is really bad. Unattached is the trendy new strategy for success. Like, don't get married young. Oh, you won't be successful in your career. And don't have children right away, or you won't be successful in your career. And so what that really means is we have later marriage, easier divorce, fewer children, and fewer family dinners. We're all by ourselves. We're all alone. And that's very sad. There's going to be a problem with that. Sometime back, a newspaper in Chicago had this article. Mrs. Mary Woodrum, a widow of about 55, jumped to her death early this morning from her apartment on the 12th floor of the north side of Chicago. On her orderly writing desk, Mrs. Woodrum left this note. I can't stand one more day of this loneliness. No sound from my telephone, no mail in my box, no friends. On the 6th floor of the same big city apartment building lives Mrs. Jenkins, another widow. Mrs. Jenkins told reporters, I wish I had known she was so lonely. I could have called on her and we could have been friends. How sad. But everybody just stays in their own apartments, in their own houses, in their own world, and they're getting lonely, and aloneness is a big problem. A companion, according to our text, is an enormous advantage in life. Enormous. Everything changes when you have a lifetime companion. When you fall, there will be somebody to help you up. When you're cold, there will be somebody to keep you warm. You'll be more productive, like the draft horses that pull together. And, of course, you'll have the ability to ward off attackers and robbers if you have a companion. But especially if you have more than one companion. What if there are three of you? What if you're a trio and not a duet? What if there's a group? Then that's really the heat. A threefold cord, says Solomon, is not easy to break. A threefold cord, three people banded together, why, that's almost unbeatable. Three, sure, you can rule the world with three. God's essence is a threefold cord, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. The family, the most basic family you can have, is a threefold cord. You have biological mom, biological dad, and a baby. That's three. Christian marriage is a threefold cord. You have the husband and wife and Jesus all banded together. Civil law is a threefold cord. You have the accuser, you have the accused, and you have the judge. when you come to social groups. A threefold cord is the most basic club, the most basic gathering. So you and I are pals. And then there becomes a third one, a three-strand braided rope. Then there's a third one. Think, well, third one, well, now we have here a club. We have here a group. We have a gang. And that's great. That's the threefold cord. So just having a lifetime companion, that's great. Or a friend in need, that's great. But what if you have three banded together, all braided together? That's almost unbeatable. And then while we're at it, what if you have 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9? What if you have a bunch of people that you're all intertwined with? Then that's the heat. All right, so we have to talk about this as a Bible thing. This is really important in Scripture. Love is everything. Love is supreme. Let's talk about the primacy of love. Notice the verses in rapid succession. 1 Corinthians 13:2. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, which would be great. I'd love to know everything, and I'd love to have perfect faith. That would be so great. But if I had all of that and have no love, I am what? Nothing. Really? I'm the smartest guy in the world. I understand all mysteries and have all knowledge. And I also have all faith, and I can move mountains. So what am I? Well, without love, you're nothing at all. Like, wow, that's harsh. I guess love is pretty important. 1 Corinthians 13:13. And now remains, when the whole world is blown into weeds, I was going to rebuild the whole thing. Now remains faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. Faith is great. Hope, wonderful. But the greatest is love. Love is everything. The primacy of love in the New Testament, in the whole Scripture. 1 Corinthians 16:14. Let all your things be done with love. Everything you do. From the moment your feet touch the floor in the morning to the moment you go to sleep, let the entire thing be done with love. Love is everything. Colossians 3:12. Put on, therefore, as elect of God, holy and beloved. You're elect people. You're holy people. You're beloved people. So put on this. Put on bowels of mercy. Just so you just love everybody. You have this funny feeling in your gut because you like people so much. Bowels of mercy and kindness and humbleness of mind and etc. And if any man has a quarrel against any, as Christ forgave you, do the same yourselves. So that's love. More. Colossians 3:14. Above all these things, lots of great things to talk about, but above all these things, the primacy of love, above all these things, put on love. 1 Thessalonians 3:12. The Lord make you to increase and abound. I know you already do love people, but the Lord, our prayer is that the Lord make you increase and have more love, not only toward one another, but toward all men. I mean, love is just everything. You take away love and you've really lost the entire spirit of the New Testament and Christian faith. 1 Thessalonians 4:9. As touching brotherly love, you do not need that I write to you, for you yourselves are taught of God to love one another. You know in your hearts, if there was never a pastor to tell you, if there was never any person in your orbit to tell you that you're supposed to love, you know in your hearts because God has been telling you that you have to love these people. God's been telling you. You yourselves are taught of God to love one another. 1 Peter 1:22. Seeing you have purified your souls and obeying the truth through the Spirit unto unpretended love of the brothers, see that you love one another with a pure heart fervently. Just no pretense. I do care about you. I just want you to be well. I want you to be everlastingly well. And then one more time, 1 Peter 4:8, which is just like the one at the top of this list. Above all these things, have fervent love, passionate love among yourselves, for love shall cover the multitude of sins. That's the primacy of love. C.S. Lewis says, affection is responsible for 9/10 of whatever solid and durable happiness there is in our lives. You take away love, and there isn't a lot of reason left to live in this world. Love is the entire reason we're here. To love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself, what else is there? It's the whole world. It's the whole reason for existence. And so if you lose that, if you don't have the companionship, if you don't have the threefold cord and the fourfold and fivefold and sixfold cord, then there's not a lot of reason to wake up in the morning. You have to make love your first ambition in life. So how is it that one ends up alone? And that's our question. How can one be warm alone? And it's a rhetorical question. It doesn't expect an answer, right? It's like, well, everybody knows you can't be warm by yourself. So how can one be warm alone? Why would anybody ever be alone? Why does aloneness happen? And I think there are five reasons. The first one I want to talk to you about is because we become fearful of being wounded or outperformed by others, so we avoid relationships. The danger is that I look at you, and I think, if I get in a relationship with you, it's going to cost me something. You're going to hurt my feelings somewhere along the way. Or I feel like an idiot when I'm around you because you're better than I am. So I think I'm just not going to pursue this relationship. You can't do that. Don't think of people as your competitors. And don't think of them as your rivals or, worse yet, your enemies. We're not competing. We're not enemies. And you can't let yourself go there. 1 Corinthians 13:4. Love suffers long and is kind, and love doesn't envy. See, these people are not your competitors. They're not your rivals, and they're certainly not your enemy. Don't let that thought occur to you. Every person you see, even if he's as mean as a snake, he's not your enemy, and you can't let yourself go there. Don't let yourself go there. Love does not envy. Love does not boast. It's not puffed up. You think, well, he makes me feel like an idiot. Well, that's being puffed up. Don't worry about being an idiot. We're all idiots. Don't worry about it. Love doesn't rejoice in iniquity. It does rejoice in the truth. It bears all things. If I get in this relationship, he's going to hurt me. It bears all things. It believes the best of people. And it hopes all things. And that's what we have to do. Matthew 5:44. Even if the person is your enemy, it's a one-sided enmity. Like, yeah, you may think of me as your enemy, but I will never think of you as my enemy. Even if you hurt me, I'm going to keep some distance. You know, if I get bitten by the neighbor's dog, I'm not going to go very close to the neighbor's dog anymore. But that doesn't mean that I hate the dog and want the neighbor to put the dog down. It just means I'm going to keep a little distance until the dog starts to treat me a little bit better. You might have to do that with people. We're not saying that when somebody hurts you, you have to get in their face and get in their world and let them hurt you over and over and over again. You're probably going to have to keep a little distance here so you don't keep getting kicked in the shins. But just because that person thinks of you as an enemy, you can't think of that person as an enemy. Now, I might not be coming close enough to you to get kicked in the shins, but I'll always look forward to the day when I can get close to you again safely. I'll always want that. And I'll always want the very best for you. You love your enemies. You bless them when they curse you, and you do good to them that hate you. It's not me against you. It will never be me against you. I won't let that happen, and we're not in competition. Again, Colossians 3:12, put on the mercies of God, kindness. And at the end, if you have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, you do the same yourself. Well, we've been quarreling. So I'm going to drop this relationship. No, you don't drop the relationship. You quit quarreling. As Christ forgave you, now you forgive that person. And so you don't just withdraw. You don't quit loving the person. You just cease the quarreling. That's the trick. Proverbs 19:11. The discretion, the wisdom of a man defers his anger. And it's his glory to pass over a transgression. Yeah, you know, I got near you and you kicked me in the shins. But, you know, that's cool. I'm fine. I'm not going to get that close to you again for a little while. But I just want you to know it's no big deal. I'm not angry and I'm overlooking it. It's no big deal. I will be glad when this relationship can be restored someday. And if that never happens, then I'm sorry, but I will always want it to happen. And you don't have to worry about me ever counting you as my enemy. Laura Flanders, working at a Christian university with some pretty wonderful Christians and pretty smart people. She says, I often give in to shame and choose to feel stupid as I work alongside my remarkable colleagues. When I do, I act in all sorts of unfortunate ways. I stop asking for help. I lose my curiosity and become louder about what I do know. I stop learning and I become counter-dependent. This is not like Jesus, and it hinders my relationships. That's so good, that list there. When I choose to feel stupid around you because you are my better, then look at all the bad things I do. I stop asking for help. Well, I don't want to look like an idiot, so I'm going to pretend that I know and I don't. I lose my curiosity. There's so many things you could teach me, but I'm afraid to explore them with you because then you think I'm dumb, and so I'm just not going to ask. I become louder about what I do know. Since you're smarter than I am, I do know one thing you don't know, and I make sure I broadcast that so everybody knows I'm at least smarter than you on this one particular thing. And I stop learning. I could have learned so much from you, but I feel like an idiot, so I'm not going to ask and let that happen. I stop learning. I become counter-dependent, like I don't need anybody. I don't need you. This is not like Jesus, and it hinders my relationships. So I withdraw from relationships. How can one be warm alone? How does a person end up lonely? How does a person end up alone? The answer, I've withdrawn from relationships because I felt like a goofball, or in this competition, I couldn't measure up, or I have a quarrel with you, and so I just withdrew. I'm not going to engage with you. Too bad. And you can end up alone because you're retaliating against those who have wounded you, wounded your ego, or perhaps even your finances or your physical person. Instead of loving and forgiving, which is the command, I don't want to do that, so I retaliate. I'll pay you back. You know, you hurt me, so now I'm going to hurt you back. Proverbs 10:12. Hatred stirs up strifes, but love covers all sins. Say, why is there so much drama in my life? There's all this strife. Why? Well, because you retaliate and the other person retaliates, and on we go. Matthew 5:44, love your enemies. Don't retaliate. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. The Lord make you to increase and abound in love. Don't retaliate. Be more loving today than you were yesterday. 1 Peter 4:8, have fervent love. Your love will cover these sins. You don't have to retaliate. Let your love cover up. Instead of loving and forgiving, Proverbs 17:9, he that covers a transgression seeks love. We don't do that. We don't cover the transgression. We retaliate. You know, I'm going to hold it against you. I'm going to begrudge you. I'm not going to ever forget this. But look what happens. If you cover the transgression, it means you're looking for love. If you don't cover it, then you're expecting loneliness. That's how it works. Once again, chapter 19, verse 11, the discretion of a man defers his anger. It's his glory to pass over a transgression. I'm not going to retaliate. I'm going to let it go. It's all right. No big deal. 17:17 in the book of Proverbs, a friend loves at all times and a brother is born for adversity. Like, okay, well, you know, you kicked me in the shins, but I love you anyway. It's okay. I'm not going to retaliate. Chapter 15, verse 1, a soft answer turns away wrath. Soft answer, nothing. I'm going to put that guy in his place. I'm going to give him a piece of my mind. I'm going to be snarky. I'm going to be sharp. I'm going to be witty. I'm going to cut him down so low. Like, no. We don't do that. Chapter 21, verse 21. He that follows after righteousness and mercy finds life, righteousness, and honor. At the end of that, honor, that's really important because honor is sort of the opposite of winding up alone in life. People think highly of you, and so they come around. And they honor you because of the way you've acted. And this is because you're following righteousness and you're following mercy. Like, you know, I'll overlook. You kick me in the shins. It's okay. I'll overlook that. We say unkind or untrue things to retaliate. Oh, well, you slapped me. Now I'm going to slap you. Let me say something unkind or untrue about you. So Colossians 3:12 again. If any man at the bottom, if any man has a quarrel, we don't say anything unkind or untrue. That's not how you do it. As Christ forgave you, you have to do that to others. Don't slap back. Proverbs 20, verse 3, it's an honor for a man to cease from strife. It's an honor. People will honor you for doing that. You don't retaliate and you don't say bad things about the person. It's an honor to just stop that. Proverbs 26:20, where no wood is, the fire goes out. Likewise, where there is no talebearer, or that's a person who whispers behind your back, where there's no talebearer, the strife ceases, the fire goes out, because you're not stoking it with more words. As coals are to burning coals, let's add more coal. keep it going. As wood is to fire, let's fuel this thing. So is a contentious man when he kindles strife. So he slapped you and you slap him. And you're just a contentious person fueling this fire. And because you've done that, there's a chance that someday you're going to end up alone. You have to stop quarreling. You have to stop saying unkind and untrue things about people. Chapter 15, verse 18, a wrathful man stirs up strife, but he that is slow to anger appeases strife. You're not at odds with everybody. You're not burning bridges. You're fixing bridges. Chapter 11, verse 29, he that troubles his own house shall inherit the wind. You're old. What is your inheritance now? Oh, guess what? You inherit nothing because you've burned the bridges to your family. You get nothing. Frightening. In the book Tuesdays with Maury, the college professor that Mitch loved so much, is dying of cancer. And Mitch and Maury are talking about a bronze sculpture that a friend of Maury's made of him about 30 years ago. And see that? Maury is telling Mitch, my friend made that for me. He had me pose for it, and I went over there many times, and he worked at it, and he wanted to make it just right. I was talking about this. He said, but it's actually a sad story. He said, my wife got sick. He moved to another part of the country, and my wife got sick, and she had to go to the hospital. Took care of things at the hospital. It was a serious illness, and she came back home, and Norman, who made me this sculpture, never even called to see how she was doing. And he said, so we dropped the relationship. Over the years, I met Norman a few times, and he always tried to reconcile, but I didn't accept it. I wasn't satisfied with his explanation. I was prideful. I shrugged him off. At this point in Maury's story, he started to choke up. He said, Mitch, a few years ago, Norman died of cancer. I feel so sad. I never got to see him. I never got to forgive. It pains me now so much. So you see what's happening there? You just retaliate. Hey, you didn't even ask how my wife was doing when she was in the hospital. So back at you. You know, we're done. We're done. I'm not even going to pursue this anymore. You hurt me, now I'm going to hurt you. You try to apologize, my answer is no. Well, if you're going to retaliate, you just might find yourself alone someday. Alone from a person that you would have really enjoyed being with. Alone when you might have pulled together and accomplished so much more. When you fell, he might have been the one to help you up. When you were cold, he might have been the one to help you get warm. When you were the one who needed an enemy fended off, he might have been the one to come alongside and help fend off the enemy. But no, you burned the bridge. And so now you find yourself alone. Francis Chan says, true faith is loving a person after he has hurt you. Anybody can love a person before he hurts you. It's true Christianity to love somebody after he's hurt you. You can't quarrel. You can't retaliate. And sometimes we end up alone because we occupy ourselves with too many superficial ambitions and entertainments. We always have to be reminded of these primacy of love texts that we started out with. The first one and the last one, above all these things, you just have to have love. It is the whole game. In Luke 12:15, Jesus warns about people who go through life just collecting toys. I want stuff. I want possessions. The idea is I'm going to get my career going, and then I'm going to get the house I want and the cars I want and the clothes I want and the toys I want, and I'm just going to work for that. Jesus says, take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life does not consist in the abundance of things which he possesses. Yeah, you've gotten stuff, but what about the relationships? Because the whole world spins around this idea to love God with everything in you and love your neighbor as yourself, not to get the next purchase. Proverbs 22:1, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor is better than silver and gold. It's better to be loved than to be rich. But you have to believe that to the core of your being. Because if you don't believe it, you're going to spend all of your time investing in stuff instead of investing in people. It's all about the people. In chapter 15, verse 17 of Proverbs, better is a dinner of herbs. You just have vegetables. You know, what'd you get from the garden today? Oh, I don't know. I got some cucumbers and some peas and beans. Better to have a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox. Well, let's go have some steak. We're right out there. It's better to have a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. Yeah, well, I burned some bridges, but let's sit here and eat this steak. It's not worth it. Go back and fix the bridges and then eat salad and you're going to be a happier person. Same thing, chapter 17, verse 1. Better is a dry morsel. What are we having for dinner tonight, hon? The same thing we had yesterday, bread, except it's dry. Better is a dry morsel and quietness therewith than a house full of sacrifices and strife. We can't get along. We can't get along. Lots of strife, lots of drama. I just can't get along. Well, you know what? You can have a house full of sacrifices, animal sacrifices, right? We have mutton. We have steak. We have lots of sacrifices here, sacrifice animals we can eat. But we don't get along so well. Well, that's a shame, because you'd be a lot happier with a crust of bread and quietness and love than lots of good food and nobody who loves you. Some years back in the Phoenix area, a lady named Marilyn brought all of her Christian friends a prayer request. Her young son had been riding his dirt bike out in the desert and he crashed and he had brain injury. So she asked everybody, please pray. And boy, did she pray. The doctor said, even if he does recover from his coma, he'll never walk again. Well, she prayed and prayed, and so did her friends, until the son got up out of his coma, and then prayed and prayed again until her son got out of a wheelchair, and prayed some more until her son didn't need crutches anymore. Then sometime later, pastor went over to her house, looked at her refrigerator, and she had pictures all over her refrigerator of like exotic vacation destinations and really special houses and cars and furniture. And he said, you know, why do you have these pictures on your refrigerator? And she said, well, in our business, we are told to put these things up on our refrigerator and work on our sales until those things become our reality. And we're not supposed to let anything get in our way, no matter what it takes. We got to push, push, push until these things that we have envisioned for our lives become our reality. And the pastor said, well, Marilyn, you're trying so hard to rationalize materialistic priorities. If the only way you can gain an audience's respect, because she become important in this, you know, multi-level marketing thing, if the only way you can gain an audience's respect is by outshining them materially, you're doomed to have fickle friends all your life. She said, no, no, no. We're just going to use this wealth as a platform of witness to other people. And so the pastor was content and went his way. Fast forward a few years, Marilyn and her husband had a divorce, and the other son, not the one that crashed in the desert, but the other one, was in jail for drug possession and sales. All the important relationships were gone and their hearts were broken. We are investing ourselves in meaningless things, superficial ambitions, superficial entertainments, and it's not worth it. If you do that, you just might find yourself alone at the end of your life. There's another thing that causes aloneness, and this is when we are getting paid back for the unkindnesses we've shown toward other people along the way. And this is bound to happen. The moral of the story is treat people well beginning right now. Proverbs 18:19. I've always loved this verse. It always is scary, but I do love it. A brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle, like the gates of a castle. So if you offend a brother, that's easy to do, right? problem is, once he's offended, how are you ever going to win him back? Because to try and win him back after he's offended is like trying to conquer a strong city with barred gates. It's pretty hard. To offend somebody is easy. To win him back after you've offended him is hard. By the way, since I'm speaking to Christians, let me remind you, you mustn't let this be true in your life from the other direction. If somebody does something that offends you, you have to, as we already said, you have to cover that transgression. You need to pass over that transgression. You need to control yourself so that you're not offended. This is especially true at this moment in American history because young people are in a call-out mode. Yeah, I got to call you out on that. And they're learning to be offended at microaggressions. They're learning to be offended at things that should be overlooked. And so it's an American thing right now. A snapshot of American history is that we're all so easily offended. And if you're going to follow Jesus, you must never be offended. Say, I don't care if you kick me in the shins. I don't care if you call me bad words. I will never be offended because the joy of the Lord is my strength. And I'm not looking to you for my strength. I'm looking to the Lord. I'm going to be okay. So from your side, you must say, I will never be offended. And you have to hate yourself and repent of it every time you are offended. Like, why do I think that I deserve to be offended because somebody didn't cross their T's or dot their I's just right around me? I do not deserve to be offended. I'm just a sinner saved by grace, and I will never forget that. I will never be offended. That's how you have to be, you know, this direction. I will never be offended. But going that way, as you deal with others, don't offend people, because once you offend them, you might never win them back. Chapter 12, verse 8 of Proverbs. There's a person who speaks, and when he speaks, it's like the piercings of a sword. Like, boy, I just wish you wouldn't speak. It's tearing me down. But the tongue of the wise is healing. I like when you speak, because when you speak, it helps me become a better person. Chapter 25, verse 18. A man that bears false witness, you know you're not telling the truth, right? He's like a maul, or a sledgehammer. He's like a maul, a sword, a sharp arrow, because what he says isn't true. If you treat people like a maul, like an arrow, like a sword, don't be surprised if when you fall, there's nobody there to pick you up. When you're cold, there's nobody there to make you warm. When you're working, there's nobody there to help you pull. And last of all, when you're attacked, there's nobody there to help you ward off the attacker. Chapter 25, verse 19 of Proverbs. Confidence in an unfaithful man. I couldn't count on you. You said you're going to do it, and you didn't do it. You said you're going to be there, and you weren't there. I can't count on you. I never know what you're going to do. Confidence in an unfaithful man in a time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. Neither one sounds very pleasant. Chapter 11, verse 9 of Proverbs. A hypocrite with his mouth destroys his neighbor, so then after a while, he's alone. Chapter 13, verse 18. Poverty and shame. Shame has to do with long-term relationships, right? Poverty and shame shall be to him who refuses instruction. You just won't listen now. You don't have any friends. People don't want to come around you. You know, you're ashamed to be around. He that regards reproof shall be honored. Now, I do want to be around you. I like you. I honor you. Chapter 25, verse 17. Withdraw your foot from your neighbor's house. Do not mooch off people, lest he be weary of you and come to hate you, resent you. You're always trying to get something from me. Don't wear out a person's patience. If you do, you might find that you're alone. There's nobody there to stand with you. Chapter 14, verse 17. He that is soon angry deals foolishly, and a man of wicked schemes is hated. So I'm an angry man, and I scheme, and now I come to a point in my life when I sure wish I had somebody to help me pull, and there's nobody around. He that troubles his own house, once again, you burn the bridges to your own family, you inherit the wind. Unpleasantness in the past, and now suddenly nobody's with me. The story is told, fable. Years ago, there was a tyrannical king. He was so evil that he literally liked to trick people and laugh at them. He liked to injure people. He was like the ultimate bully. Word came to him that there was a young citizen in his kingdom who wanted to meet him, who idolized the tyrant king. wanted to meet him and wanted to please him so that maybe the tyrant king would give him some of his royal favors. And the king had a great idea. He said, bring the young man to me. The young man was an apprentice blacksmith. The tyrant said to the young blacksmith, do you think you could make me a mighty chain? And the blacksmith said, I think I can. He says, you make me a mighty chain, and I will give you gold and special status among the famous in my kingdom. So the young apprentice blacksmith went back to his anvil, and he began to form a chain. And a link after link, he made the chain until it was a good, strong, and mighty chain. He brought it to the king for approval, and the king was out of temper. He was angry about other things, and plus he liked to hurt the young blacksmith. And so he raged him. He said, you take this measly chain away and you make it twice as long. So he had already spent years making this chain. Now he went back to his blacksmith shop and he made it twice as long. It also took him years. This was a hard chain to make. Brought back to the tyrant king and the same thing happened. He said, take it back and double the length. And so he did it again. And he spent the best years of his life making this chain for the tyrant king. And finally, when the blacksmith had spent the best years of his life making the chain long enough to suit the king of his province, the wicked tyrant laughed at the blacksmith for being so gullible. And he told his soldiers, take the chain, bind this man's hands, and throw him in the dungeon chained for the rest of eternity. That's what the devil does to you. Say, well, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you back. I'm in competition with you, so I'm going to withdraw. You have been in some way beneath me, disagreeable to me, so I'm burning the bridge. And you do it again, it's another link in your chain, and again another link in your chain, and again, and when it's all done, the devil will say, see, I got you, didn't I? Saddest story a lady wrote on social media a short time back. Valentine's Day, which happened to be the day before the birthday of her ex-husband. And she wrote, I still can't believe I did it. She's referring to leaving her husband for another man. I still can't believe I did it. Those few seconds when he sort of figured things out and he asked her, are you seeing another man? Those few seconds remain, to this day, the worst of my life. Standing opposite you, a man I still very much loved, I was petrified because I knew that the next words to come out of my mouth were going to break your heart. And they did. You ran to the bathroom and threw up. And she continued this affair. She said, I let you down, my family down, and I'd let myself down. A few years later, the affair romance also ended. She said, I even called you once and wanted to apologize then, but you hung up on me. Remember when we happened to be in the same restaurant a few years ago after we split? You ignored me, understandably, and I deserve that. I don't blame you. But losing contact with you was like a bereavement. In fact, it was worse. At least a bereavement is no one's fault. I brought all this on myself. So why am I saying sorry now and so publicly? Because in 2012, I had a cancer diagnosis. About 50% of women given this diagnosis will die within months. And even if you can't find it in your heart to give me this gift of forgiveness, I still maintain what I wrote in my social media post last Valentine's weekend. I hope you're healthy and happy wherever you are. And I'm sorry. With love, Nina. How horrible. So you treat people badly long enough, and then you're cold and there's nobody there to warm you. And you're pulling and there's nobody there to pull with you. And you are trying to fend off the attackers, but there's nobody to help you fend them off because you're alone. How awful. Well, there's one other reason that we have to say before we go home. Sometimes aloneness happens because of the spiritual warfare that surrounds our lives. So don't chastise yourself if you're lonely if you're alone. In every case, maybe it's not your fault. We live in a very hostile environment. This is the way it happened to Jesus, right? And to so many of our biblical heroes, Jesus was left alone. Remember David living in the cave, hiding from Saul. Daniel was pretty much alone all by himself. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were alone. Sometimes you just happen to be alone. It's not your fault. The question, how can one be warm alone, for you as a faithful believer, is answered this way. Well, don't you just worry about that, sir. As a Christian, I never am alone, because the Lord's companionship will always be yours. But you want to make sure that you've done everything in your power to have more companionship in life, to love people. Matthew 10:16, the Lord says, see, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. This is a hostile world. Be therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to the councils, you know, judgments. Brothers shall deliver up brother to death, father and child, and the children shall rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. And you'll be hated of all men for my name's sake. Do not think that I've come to send peace on earth. I did not come to send peace, but a sword. I've come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. That one always works out. And a man's foes shall be those of his own house. How many times have you heard about a young Muslim man who becomes a Christian and he's shunned by everybody around him? It's hard to be a Christian sometimes. John 15:18. If the world hates you, you know it hated me before it hated you. If you're of the world would love its own. But because you're not of the world, but I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said to you. The servant is not greater than his Lord. If they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. Sometimes you're just alone and it's not your fault. Paul, 2 Timothy 4:16, just before he died, he said, at my first answer in court, no man stood with me, but all men abandoned me. I pray God that it may not be laid to their charge, which is what we've been talking about, right? You just overlook a transgression. Why didn't you guys show up with me in court? I'm all by myself. Notwithstanding, the Lord stood with me. I'm never really alone, right? The Lord stood with me and strengthened me, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. I was okay. David Ring talks about being born with cerebral palsy. When he was 11 years old, his dad died. When he was 14 years old, his mom died. When he'd go to school, people would laugh at him. They would mock him because he couldn't speak clearly. He couldn't walk well. And everybody, ha, ha, ha. When he went to high school, there was one girl who said in front of everybody, hello, retard. Just broke his heart. He's just a kid. He's falling apart. It was the devil's way to break this poor young man down. And he said at that time, my life was a nightmare. I was hopeless, worthless, and nothing to live for. Well, as you know, David Ring became a Christian when he was in high school. He realized some of the things we're talking about today. He began to implement these things in his life. And by the time he was a senior in high school, having been mocked all those other years, by the time he was a senior in high school, he was the president of his student body. And he was much loved. He has gone on to become a very, very effective evangelist around the world, and people look up to him. He's married a beautiful young lady, and he has children of his own. He has a wonderful life. But the devil was trying to bring him down, and he was all alone, and it wasn't his fault. And you might be alone, and it's not your fault. How can one be warm alone? Here's what you have to do. Cultivate relationships, even if they might hurt sometimes, or make you feel inferior. You're not in competition, and these people are not your enemy. Don't let your mind go there. Don't retaliate when a relationship has caused pain. Don't say, well, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. No, we don't do that. Cultivate loving relationships over wealth and popularity. It's not about the toys you get in this world. It's about people. Love people and let that be your priority. Invest in that. Never mistreat others, because once the brother is offended, it's awfully hard to win him back. And last of all, if you are the person who is abandoned by humans through no fault of your own, then rest in the Savior's companionship, because he will never leave you or forsake you.